Merkle Media.
Flashback Fridays here on Macroaggressions, taking you back to July 2022, episode 249, The American Empire's Five-Year Plan with Greg Carlwood. Hey, if you're thinking of converting some of your soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve notes into tangible gold and silver, talk to our sponsor, Wise Wolf. Get in the Wolfpack Auto Buy Program at www.macroaggressions.gold. Now enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dateline NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing support. We know you've got like literally millions of other options out there, and the fact that you've chosen to spend some time with me means a lot to me. I appreciate it. I'll try to deliver you the best information I can. No promises, though. Thank you to our sponsors, Chemical Free Body. Holy moly. Tim James has been on this show more than anybody because every time he comes on, he delivers really easy to understand information about how to improve your current health situation. We're all battling something. The best thing you can do is be proactive about this. You don't want to try and hide and wait for some doctor to maybe figure it out. You got to be responsible for your own actions. You got to be responsible for what you put into your body. Tim James found this out the hard way. It felt like he said he's almost dying in his 30s, turned his life around. He's been over a decade on this mission to help improve people's lives. He's done a great job of it. His company is called Chemical Free Body. And if you are so inclined, you can go to the website that they built for us, the landing page, chemicalfreebody.com/macro, where you can see a little 2-minute clip that I put together about the results of what Tim James is Detox in a Box is what they call it, did to me it's supposed to be 90 days. I think I did the program in 75 days because I'm difficult, I guess. I don't know. But I did it a little bit early. It leaned me out so much, I had to do a video of it. It is worth taking a look. So if you are so inclined, go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro. Take a look. See what you think. See if the Detox in a Box is right for you. And if so, use the promo code MACRO on your way out to save yourself a couple of bucks. And also thank you to our sponsor, My Patriot Supply. They also have built a fantastic landing page for us called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. If you go there, you can get yourself a discount on a 4-week supply of food, on a 3-month supply of food. And I got to warn you, the 3-month supply of food, they'll send you 120 pounds of food in 6 different buckets. It's free shipping. They're not going to charge you for the shipping. But this is one of these situations where you're probably better off being, a little bit early than a day late. So we don't want to get into You don't want to get into a jousting match with some asshole in the frozen food section. So get your food situation sorted out early. Take care of it now. You can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and knock it all out in about 10 minutes. You can take care of yourself, your family. If you are so inclined, you can support your family that lives in other states. If they're the last to figure this out, but you know what's going on, maybe buy some food and have it sent to them as well if you're a nice person. You'd be a whole lot nicer than I am. But I think there's a lot of people out there that see what's happening. They see the supply chain. It's becoming very real to them now. It had always been theoretical, but those days are over. We're facing some real situations with food security. So take advantage of the relative calm before the storm. Get yourself prepared, and you can do so. Prepare with macroaggressions.com. Anything that supports our sponsors also helps to support the show, and we certainly do appreciate that. Well, I'll tell you what, I probably wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for our guest. I'll be honest, I'm very, very serious about that. I was nice enough to be invited onto his show a couple months after I put out my first book, The Octopus of Global Control. I was a fan of his beforehand. I've got a book called Project Camellia that I bought because I watched him have the author on, Robert Guffey, on to talk about the craziest story I've ever heard. And I bought the book. And when I finished my book, I said, you know who I should contact? See if he'd be interested in hearing about it. Good old Greg Carlwood over at the Higher Side Chats. So we're lucky to have Greg. What's going on, Greg? Good to see you.
Oh, man. What a kind introduction.
Well, it's, you
know so much more about this stuff than me. I just ask the questions to guests like you. But to have me here, I'm honored.
Well, I'm not going to do an introduction like your introductions, because your introductions are sort of legendary. I mean, everybody knows that. But it's true that I probably wouldn't be doing this if I hadn't met you, because you introduced me. I remember one time I reached out and I said, hey, would you be able, I saw you were doing something. I think you were doing something in San Diego with Sam Tripoli. And I said, would you mind introducing me to Sam? Because, or, you know, or give me an email out or something that I could reach out to him, because we'd had some overlap. And from that contact, you put me in touch with Sam, and Sam and I have become really good friends because of that. The Union of the Unwanted as a show is happened with me and Sam and Ricky and Mike. And part of that is because I was able to meet Sam, and so I have to thank you for that. So I appreciate that. This little alternative media world is a real great place. I think the people that are in it are very supportive of one another. There's a lot less of this like protecting my stuff, and I don't want you. And it's way more collaborative. And so, and your relationship with Sam, you know, I thought was. I was like, well, Sam's cool. He seems like a cool guy, and he knows Greg, and I know Greg, and maybe we can hook this up. And so I appreciate that. So thank you, I guess, it's for getting me into this.
Thank you, man. Yeah. I mean, cheers to that. I'm here just having a kind of a one man mimosa brunch in Southern California, as you do, while kicking back and basically, to use your term, watching what looks like a controlled demolition of the American empire.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you've been out on the road recently. You did a little meet and greet with one of your Higher Side Chat meetups in Austin. How was that? And did that turn out all right?
It was great. You know, I've done the show as long as people do shows. I mean, I think it's 12 years now, and I've done maybe 5 or 6 live events. Just, I always feel like my time, you know, the economy of time, it's better spent for me online than what it takes to do live events sometimes. But, you know, COVID changed my opinion on the value of live events a little bit. And I also just never felt like it's my best work doing something live. But, you know, Gordon White's been a good friend of mine for a long time, and he made it to Austin. So I was like, well, if you can make it from Tasmania to Austin, I guess I can make it out there as well.
Yeah.
So, drove with the wife and baby out there, and, you know, scouted a bunch of places along the way. We're really looking to maybe move out of here. And, you know, we look at Phoenix, probably not, but we'd look at it. We look at Colorado. We look at Texas. We look at Kentucky. We look at going back to Missouri as well. Yeah. A lot of places are so Missouri-like that it's just like, well, am I really going to move to Tennessee when I could just go back to Missouri where it's basically the same and I also know 60, 70 people that I'd like to hang out with again.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard, but yeah, the event was great. We did a live podcast, which is also kind of rare. Like, yeah, as you know, I've done the events with Sam.
Yep.
And, you know, Sam's a loud guy. Sam knows other loud guys. So sometimes I'm really just sitting on stage with a microphone, just hanging out, listening to Eddie Bravo talk about the flat earth. And that's cool. Like, I don't mind that. But, you know, this one, because me and Gordon have such a good rapport, I felt like it was, you know, more in the tone of what THC typically is, as opposed to tinfoil hat. And Gordon had just come back from doing ayahuasca and San Pedro out in the jungle. And, you know, he's spiritually inclined and astrologically inclined and geopolitically inclined. And he's like, you know, he was really on about, you got to get the hell out of San Diego. It's not looking good over the next couple of years. There's a lot of models that suggest World War III really kicks off in the late stages of 2023. And I was like, how can we talk about anything else? You know, we tried, we talked about ayahuasca and, you know, that whole experience a little bit, but it all bleeds into supply chain shortages, food rationing, the controlled demolition. I mean, everybody's excited right now about the Georgia Guidestones or CERN or Hunter Biden. It's hard for me to look in below beyond the surface level to some of that stuff because I'm really just concerned, especially being a new dad, like what the hell's going on? And you need to use the knowledge you have, you know, like we have all this knowledge. And sometimes I just think it's like, well, record another show. And it doesn't really bleed into my regular life, but it's seriously time to stop messing around, you know.
Part of that, I think, is the dad component.
Sure.
Because as somebody that I also grew up, I grew up in Southern California and never thought I would leave, moved to Vegas for a decade, but Vegas is like a suburb of Southern California. I mean, everyone goes back and forth. It wasn't until my daughter was born in 2011 that things started to really change for me where I started to have, it felt like it reset the clock where I was like, well, listen, if the world goes to hell, I mean, I've only got X many number of years left here and I don't want that to happen. It would suck and all my friends would, we'd all die, you know, but whatever. But when you have a kid, then all of a sudden I have to now care. I don't have to just care for the duration of what's left of my life, but I have to worry about the entirety of hers. And so the things that I might have been like, well, I guess that if that happens, it happens. I've been less dismissive of that and really focused on the more important things. And the global supply chain issue and everything that we're having, it is like a controlled demolition of the American empire, but it's like you're watching it in slow motion so that you have like, you see these things happen. You go, that's very unusual that all of these food processing plants are on fire. I wonder why that's happening, you know, and in and of itself, it would just be an unusual occurrence, but under the guise of this big picture, you go, well, that's one of the support columns that you would knock out would be the food, you know, like you would knock out the food, delivery. You would knock out the dollar. You would knock out people's ability to know left from right, male from female. You know, you would create as much confusion as you could. And then we're looking at all this and we go, oh, I wonder if it's all connected. Your whole podcasting career has been talking about how all of these things are connected. I mean, how is it possible for people to be so asleep that they can't see the danger? It's right in front of their eyes. This is imminent danger for them. And they just, is this willful ignorance? Is it just has the media brainwashed everyone? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, man, it's really hard. I wouldn't say I get depressed. That's not really right. But I definitely get disappointed in the people that I'm around, as we were talking before the show. Like, my regular life is full of people that don't really care about what I do to make money. You know, we don't talk about work, you know, we have fun. We have shared interests in other ways and shared history. So, you know, it just, this conspiracy thing never factored into a lot of my friendships. I didn't care what they thought about 9/11. It was, you know, whatever. It doesn't mean I can't have fun with someone, but COVID really changed that. Obviously, it's every single interaction every day. Your opinion of it matters. You go and you meet your 10 friends at a baseball game and you don't have your mask and everyone else does. It's like, well, you know, you're outed now. And it just, it makes everything weird. It really sucked. Yeah. And, you know, we're past that now, the COVID thing, but it's the same problem when I'm looking at the inflation, everything you mentioned, all these connected things, you know, the supply chain and all that, just the possibility of World War III, the fact that, like, I know people who put Ukrainian flags in their profiles, and it's like, dude, do you think there might be some consequences of, like, sending this many billions of dollars, not only for, you know, the opposition, Russia, who's not going to be quite happy about that. We are fighting a proxy war like it's the 51st state over there. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that the economy is on such shaky footing and we're sending our money, you know, we're sending this over there. Like, and don't you think there might be some consequences in multiple ways for that? And it's just really frustrating because I said the other day, you know, you have a couple of drinks and it starts coming out. And I was like, you know, guys, if we were under attack, would you know? And when would you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I couldn't even go much further than that because, like, it would take so much explanation to get them up to speed on why I would even suggest such a thing. But I really think we're under attack and so many people just aren't recognizing it. They're just going about their lives. They're just dealing with the punches as they come, not realizing there's coordination, not realizing that the World Economic Forum just had their big conference and the people are on stage saying exactly what they're going to do, saying lines like COVID has been the most profitable product that we've ever seen. I mean, no one's looking at that. No one's thinking about that. It's really frustrating. Another thing, like, you know, everybody's worked up about Roe v. Wade. I know people that are going to protests regularly and it's like, hey, we're in California. It's okay. You know, the issue right. is not really an issue here. Maybe protest in Texas. Go out there. Because yeah. I don't know what you're doing right here. And, you know, not to harp too much on that thing, but it's just like, there are bigger fish to fry, honestly, right now. There are massive, massive problems. Complete, you know, people want to say our government's inept. And that's true. I think their plan will fail. I mean, there is the plan on paper. And then there's how much they can actually execute. That's the only thing that allows me to wake up in the morning is that the fact is that this is going to fail. But I mean, we're deep in it and no one is asking questions about it. You know, everybody I know has had COVID at least once, you know, whatever it is, you know, there's obviously debate, but has been sick recently and it fits the description. Maybe they tested positive if they're testing people. I've been sick twice throughout this, but I don't test. So it's like, I got sick. Maybe that was it. I don't know. Maybe there is nothing. But regardless, like, no one's looking into where that we all know it came from somewhere now, but nobody wants to, like, do that investigation. They're doing the January 6th bullshit.
Right.
Like, how about the where did COVID come from investigation? How about the outrage there? It's just like everywhere you look, they're focused on the wrong thing. Obviously, that's a tactic, a distractionary tactic, but it's just really concerning that, like, people I really care about a lot are just, like, completely oblivious to a coordinated attack on their way of life. And they're going to wake up and be like, what happened? And it's like, dude, one of your best friends talks to people all the time, some of the best geopolitical experts, and you never asked a question. I'm fucking sorry, man, but I got to get out of here.
Right. I am in the same boat as you in that I have my best friends that I grew up with, guys that I've known since kindergarten that I'm still friends with, great guys. And again, they're not into the things I'm into. I'm not, you know, and that's fine. It's not required. We don't talk about it. We can if they want to, but I don't, you know.
I want to push it. You don't.
I don't push it. I understand it because I'm into some weird stuff that's non-mainstream, and I'll have the conversation if they want to have it. But I don't want it to ever come across as me, like, lecturing or anything like that. But it was the summer of 2020, And we were all, we had made a decision that somebody was like, hey, I found this cool, like, online poker game. It cost, I don't know, $10 for 3 hours. And it's like, we can all jump on, but it's also kind of like Zoom, where we've got there's a camera, it activates your camera and your microphone. So you're playing online poker against your buddies, but you're also talking to them. So the poker was sort of incidental to the chit chat that was going on, but it was going on for 3 hours. And then we did it again a couple of weeks later. And it was a fun way to see everybody. They're all in California and I'm out in Colorado. And during that, this was right when COVID was coming out, and there was a lot of questions about it. I said to them, look, in the future, there's going to be a vaccine that is going to be pushed out for COVID. And it's going to come with a ton of sales, a real sales campaign, and a lot of fear. And they're going to try and scare you into taking it. And all I want to say, I said, I don't want to turn this poker game into anything else, but I just want to say this, and I want you guys to all acknowledge that you hear me. Before you take that shot, if you're thinking about it, just before you do it, all I ask is give me one shot to talk to you. Call me, text me, whatever. I just want to tell you what I know before you do that. Mm-hmm. They all took the shot. Yeah. Every one of them. Yeah. Nobody called me. They all took the shot. And I just threw my hands up and I go, you know what, guy? Like afterwards, it was like, you know, I got a Zoom, a FaceTime call. They were all out at a bar for somebody, you know, one of their birthday parties. Like, hey, what's up? Hey, guys, what's going on? Like, hey, Pfizer gang. I was like, you fucking guys don't even know what you've done to your Pfizer gang. Are you joking about that? Like, you guys have created so many problems for yourself. You have no idea. And the guy's like, dude, don't worry about it. I go, well, enjoy. I mean, did you check with your life insurance company before you did that? Because you more than likely just nullified your life insurance policy. He just goes, I don't want to talk about this anymore. And so it was like, it ended. And it was like, see, I bring one comment up and it shut everything down. And I just felt like, I love you guys. I want only the best for you. I have no hidden agenda. I'm not selling you anything. I'm not trying to talk you into joining my religion or my cult or any of this shit. I'm just saying, please call me before you take the vaccine. And they all did it. And I went, well, if I can't even reach my best friends,
yeah,
it made me question, like, should I even be doing this? You know, like, what's the point if I can't reach those people? So, I mean, I'm assuming you've had similar feelings.
Yeah, so similar. I mean, so similar, in fact, that, like, we're going to have to talk about what poker program you use, because my buddies were looking for one. We settled on just using Poker Stars and just having only the chat, which sucks, you know? So we need to coordinate, because
I'll figure out what my buddy used. Yeah, it was like in a beta test, so sometimes it kind of failed, but it didn't matter, because all we wanted to do was really talk and do all that stuff.
Exactly.
And I didn't want it to be like, you're all trapped in a room with me and now you have to listen to me for 3 hours. So I didn't do that. I could have, but I didn't want to. But yeah, I fit our friends, you know, we love them. We want what's best. Our families too. I've got the same situation with some members of the family that are like, they're in it. And then once you're in it, then can your friends ever really admit that they've made a mistake, or do they just kind of say, well, the decision has been made. I'm in this club. No sense trying to, like, make myself crazy about it now. Right.
Yeah. There is no, man, you were kind of right about that. There's never going to be that. I don't even expect that. I do have a couple of my friends that are good old extremists, but they're so far, they're flat earth people. And they're like, that's their litmus test. And it's like, you know, for me, it might be how you feel about COVID or the vax, but then for them, it's like, well, if you think the earth is round, dude, I mean, how serious can I take you?
Right.
I'm used to being the extremist, but there's a few things now where it's like, I'm the centrist. I'm the conspiracy centrist. It's weird. Yeah. But I mean, I don't care. I'd rather hang out with people that agree with everything up and down the line to the shape of the earth than people who are just on the mainstream page. So it's fine, but I'm just mostly worried about the future. You know, I've gotten so much feedback about, like, dude, don't do another COVID show. I don't care about germ theory versus terrain theory. I don't care. And it's like, yes, I get it, you know, and we should move on because there's that quote about like generals always fighting the last war. I feel like that is over. Like you made your choice. Doesn't matter how you feel about it now. Your body doesn't care. I mean, what's in your body is in your body. You know, how you've behaved is how you've behaved. I get emails from people that are like, oh, I just did this great documentary about how they never did isolate the virus. I'm like, dude, I can't. I'm over. I'm not doing that show. I'm over it. Or like I wrote, made this documentary series about how the lockdowns affected people. I'm like, yeah, great. How about we do a show about what's coming, you know, instead of what has already been here? Like, yes. I know several people who have bought Teslas recently. And it's like, dude, that's a very bad decision. You can't, you just spent close to $100,000 on a car that can't get you back home to St. Louis. I mean,
yeah.
You can stop, I guess, at a fast food at a Hardee's in Arizona to recharge for 2 hours and then get back on the road. Like, it's just ridiculous. I think it's just like people are not seeing the just you need to armor up yourself right now. I mean, it's just like in one way or another, like I'm trying to move. I know this isn't the place to be. I'm seeing the tower, the 5G stuff go up in the neighborhood. I have no control over it. I have no control over if there's a smart meter on this building. I can't control it. So right. Like, I can't worry about it all that much. You know, power lines, high voltage power lines are linked to childhood leukemia. I have a kid now. So yeah. I'm going to try to find 3 to 5 acres where I can control what is around me. I'm going to hardwire everything and we're not going to have phones in the bedroom and the phones go off at night. And that's how I want to live. I'm just trying to get there. But it's like, on the other hand, the people I know are just like, I can't believe you'd leave San Diego. I mean, it's just so, so great here. It's like, it is in some ways, you know, the weather basically, but everything else is worse than it was 10 years ago when I got here, whether it's homelessness, whether it's, I mean, even weather, because I've had to move away from the beach to have more space. And now it's like, I might as well live in Arizona. It's freaking hot over here.
And no air conditioning really in San Diego too. They're like, oh, it's just the most temperate climate ever. It's like, until it isn't.
Right, right. So, I mean, I'm thinking about Texas, but I'm seeing so much about Texas grid issues. They, I guess, tried to have an independent grid and it's not going super well. There were the bread lines the last winter or whatever. You know, Tim Dillon talks about how he got convinced to move to Austin from Joe Rogan. And then he's standing in line for bread and it's 30 degrees out. Says, what the fuck did I do?
Right.
So I worry about that. I worry about, you know, growing up in the Midwest, tornadoes, they happen. There are no basements in Texas. I kind of want a basement. It's probably where I'd record my show. And I like having double the space of your square footage because you have a basement. I mean, I grew up in the Midwest where that's normal. So
yeah.
I'd like to move back to somewhere where that is normal. You know, I've been listening to some preppers and, you know, preppers have a certain mindset, of course, that it's, you know, everything's coming down and they've probably had this mindset for a decade already. So the fact that they seem right at this juncture isn't necessarily, you know, the thing you should hang your hat on. A broken clock's worth right twice a day. You know, a blind squirrel sometimes finds a nut. If this person's been on this track, you know, I try not to get too worked up and too doom and gloomy about it, but they're talking about, you know, bombs will fall on the United States in the next 3 to 5 years. Like serious, serious bombs. I'm avoiding the word nuclear because some people don't even think that's real. You know, I deal with buddies who don't think that's real. But I just say replace nukes with like, big fucking bombs, like
rods of God. I mean, that might as well be nuclear. That's from space.
So they're talking about basements because it's not just about you in the sense that, like, you want a basement for protection from extreme weather, extreme war, and you want to know that everyone you're around has the capacity to store a lot of stuff, food and that kind of thing. Like, if the supply chain suddenly collapsed in San Diego, I already know that everyone I'm around does not have a basement, barely probably has a pantry, is in a Cracker Jack box apartment, and just doesn't have, I know they don't have the resources because I know they don't have the space. And I never really thought much about that till I was listening to some of these preppers, and like, that does feel somewhat important to me. I don't like seeing, not only is the grid going up and down in Texas, but they're also throttling temperatures using those Nest thermostats. They're saying nothing below 78. That's a little hot, actually, especially inside when it's 100 outside.
Yeah.
So I don't like that. It's really, I'm just in this scouting phase of like, where do I want to go? Because I only get to make the move once, and we're probably going to be there for another 10 years at least. Unless it gets so bad, I have to feel like we have to leave the country, which I don't love, but could happen. I've looked at the Yucatan. I've looked at places in Ecuador, basically places Gordon's looked at as well. And there's some interesting stuff there, but it's also kind of like, I don't even think in these racial terms, but I don't want to be an American in Ecuador or Mexico when shit goes really bad, because I just feel like there's some people who could take that out on me and my family.
For sure.
And, you know, I hope, I think about every possible contingency. And so that's one of them.
I think we have the solution for you. It's New York City. And as long as you stay away from the windows, as they said in the PSA, everything's going to be fine. That.
Yeah. I was going to mention that. Also, the New Jersey Mall, they put a sign up. And look, I'm aware that during the Cold War, a lot of people probably prepped and obsessed, and then nothing happened.
Yeah.
Is this just more fear-based propaganda? Possibly. But I feel like it's not just about, does a nuke drop on the U.S. or not? Like, there's a lot of other factors as to why a person should get out of the city. You don't want to be in a city when there's only a few highways in and out and everybody needs to get in or out.
Yeah.
But some of the geopolitical analysis that I've been listening to kind of gets into the fact that, you know, Russia and China are waiting until China can build up its weaponry to this level where they do feel like they can take on the globalist network, and that is probably going to happen. Every time the economy is going poorly, we start a war. Like, that seems to be conspiracy 101, as you can see those pieces move. So that's concerning. I've heard that China will probably take Taiwan. Russia will continue to take things that helps them rebuild their old Soviet Union bloc. But the major catalyst that I thought was interesting is that we might see North Korea invade South Korea. And that is when the U.S. would have to step in, because we have 40,000 troops there. We don't have troops in Taiwan. Like, we can huff and puff and say, don't do that, China. But we probably would let them do it.
Right.
We won't let North Korea take South Korea. And they're talking like they want to do that. So, you know, if North Korea is kind of a puppet state of China and they decide to do that and we're forced to get into it, same with NATO. That's the other thing I hate, is like, we're in this NATO agreement, so we have to respond full stop, including nuclear option, if any of those places are attacked. Like, I'm fucking sorry. Like, we got to worry about what's going on here.
Yeah.
But, you know, if that catalyst happens, what I had heard is, like, if you see North Korea actually go to invade South Korea, expect bombs to drop on U.S. soil within a couple of weeks. And wow, that's like, it's really scary to hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The other thing I was reading about is the Russian nuclear subs that they've been going on and on about, that they can avoid detection from U.S. Navy systems, and that we could see those pop up on the East Coast. Either coast, but most likely the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And if they detonate them a mile off shore, we will see a tsunami that wipes out huge swaths of the East Coast, like miles and miles, entire cities will get hit with this giant tsunami. And we won't even know. Like, our news might be like, that's climate change for you. I mean, right. Sometimes they just lie and hide stuff, and they keep, you know, the real reasons for things under the table. So it's possible. I could even see a false flag. If people aren't wanting to get into this conflict, we aren't, a false flag will do it. They've done it before. So I'm really worried about the next 5 years, and the fact that there's so many people right now, either they're completely oblivious or they're actually cheering on the kind of thing that screws us in the end, whether it's climate legislation, getting a Tesla, wearing the mask, not really realizing there's a shortage of things and not stocking up on anything, not being prepared in any way. I mean, we're going to get caught with our pants down. And I don't try to be paranoid. And I, you know, acknowledge that these preppers have a certain mindset that is always this all the time. But I think they might be onto something.
I've been joking for a while. Like, we owe the preppers an apology. Yeah, we made fun of them. Like, you preppers with your doomsday prepper shows and, you know, and all that stuff and talking about, they're going to get it. There's this house in Vegas that, my business partner, she's had the listing on, I think, before. She's definitely been to it multiple times. And my buddy who owns an air conditioning company has been called out there to service their air conditionings. And you go to this lot and it's like a, I don't know how big it is. It might not be too big. It might be like a quarter acre, half acre lot. And it looks like there's just like an apartment unit sitting on the top. It's like a 1,000 square foot place, but underneath it there's an 11,000 square foot building that is totally underground, and it was built by some rich casino guy back in the Cold War. Like, it must have been it looked like it was built in the 60s or 50s or 60s or something, but the inside's been redone. It's just this huge indoor house with, like, it looks like they're trying to make it natural lighting. All the walls are painted like a beach with palm trees and bushes. And then there's like artificial turf in there. And it's like, it's a trip. So that guy like took it to the extreme, and they're like, he spent over $1 million building this place. I was like, somebody's going to want it at some point. you can fully go underground. But I wonder though, that's the first I've even heard about North Korea, South Korea. I don't really ever think too much about North Korea.
Me either.
I don't take them seriously as a threat, because it's like, man, like if you can't even, I mean, if your people are eating crickets, then like, but then again, like you said, it's a proxy of China, and maybe the same way Russia looks at Ukraine and go, well, Ukraine, you know, poorest country in Europe, and what are they going to do to us? And it's like, well, probably nothing. But they're just, you know, when the U.S. puts their hand in the Ukrainian puppet and starts making moves, that's a different story. And if North Korea, we could dismiss them all day long. But if China chooses to use them as the puppet to attack South Korea, then it's most definitely on. And Obama talked about the pivot to Asia. That would rightly concern me if I were in your shoes, being in San Diego, because obviously it's where the naval bases are. There's a focus there. So it would definitely be a threat. And everything that you said about Russian submarines theoretically setting off a large device a mile offshore and creating a tsunami, of course, could happen on the Pacific coast side too. There's nobody saying that couldn't happen. So it's a dangerous time to be here. Do you sometimes feel like you wish you didn't know what you know?
Well, yeah, they say, of course, ignorance is bliss. And sometimes I do think about those friends I have who don't care about this at all, and they just work a job. I know one guy has worked the same job since he was 18, and it's a union job. He's about to probably be able to retire by 42 because he's been in here so long without ever changing. Yeah. And I'm just like, that is so boring. You know, it just drives me nuts. I couldn't be that way, but I'm sort of jealous also because he doesn't wake up in a cold sweat thinking about all this stuff. Another point about potential issues in the United States, I'm also hearing about the grand solar minimum. You know, a lot of people are talking about that and the fact that we could go into some kind of mini ice age type thing. You know, a lot of times the elite are riding natural waves, and they just know, and at least in my opinion, they kind of know what's going to happen, and then they lie to us about why it's happening, or like, let's say astrological cycles as well. They might know, like, hey, this is a chaotic period, so let's plan a bunch of chaos in the window of chaos. Like, they do a lot of that stuff, in my opinion. And some of the climate people that I do listen to, they're talking about grand solar minimum. They're talking about a mini ice age. They're talking about massive flooding in the United States, and like the upper parts probably are going to be so cold. They're going to be like Alaska, you know, in Montana and stuff like that. So if you're looking to grow certain things, like maybe Texas is going to start feeling more like Colorado. It's really tough to know. I mean, I take some of that with a grain of salt, because this system is so complex and so old that what do you really know about it? What are you going to really be able to pinpoint about it? But the reason I was bringing that up is because there is this interesting thing. My most recent interview, it isn't even up yet, is with this woman, Tess Clark. She runs the YouTube page Mythos Decoded, and she kind of combines electric universe with new chronology, with comets and catastrophe. And, you know, a lot of times these plagues that have happened, they happen in the window of a comet. And so there's a lot of people who are into the electrical universe stuff that say, well, when comets come into contact with our upper atmosphere, it creates an electrical discharge that results in huge swaths of people getting sick because we're electrical beings. It's not a virus. It's that. There's a book called New Light on the Black Death that goes into why the Black Death was probably more related to a comet than anything else. There's no area where they've been able to find mass rats, you know, mass dead rats, which they're like, oh, all these rats carrying the plague everywhere. No, but it is right in the window of a massive comet interaction with our upper atmosphere. So there's weird stuff like that. I don't know what makes us sick and all that, but getting to it, this interview with Tess Clark, she brings up that there's this guy, John Moore. He was a military SEAL vet. I had never heard this, but if you just type in John Moore map, you can find it pretty easy on Google. But he was shown a map when he was in the military where they said, they handed out the map and they're like, this is going to be what the US looks like during your lifetime. And it shows insane things. It shows basically both coasts underwater. It shows the Mississippi River being so, flooded that like all along it on both sides are super flooded. Like the new coastline to the Mississippi, instead of St. Louis, it might be like the Ozarks. It's pretty wild. But if you type in John Moore map, anyone can look at it. If you're in the boat that I'm in and you're looking at moving and you're thinking about all the things like that could happen and how to be armored up against all of them, I wouldn't discount the grand solar minimum possibility. And I wouldn't discount this map that was handed out to apparently high level military people. And some of them, once they retired, they definitely didn't live within the flooded spots of that map.
I remember hearing a guy talking about that, and the guy said, well, where do you live? And he said, I live in the Ozarks now because of this. I specifically moved there. Yes. It might have been this John Moore guy. I heard somebody talking about it. It was I got out of the military. I saw this map. I think I know the map you're talking about. When was the last time there was a grand solar minimum? Do we know?
Good question. I mean, they talk about the Younger Dryas event, you know, 12,000 years ago. I think there's been other periods of grand solar minimum. And that is kind of what gets me, is because they always talk about sun. These people, they talk about sunspots and solar flares knocking out the grid. And it's like, well, I don't think that's ever happened in my lifetime. I mean, maybe little pockets. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you read these accounts of pillars of fire, in the like biblical accounts of raining fire or pillars of fire, the electric universe model people think that those are plasma electrical discharges from things that enter the atmosphere. They make a good case for a lot of different periods where you have all this literature about the city was destroyed from dragons from the sky. Well, you know, they're not dragons, they're plasma discharges. Mm-hmm. People see things in the sky like the Norway spiral. And we think, oh, that's elite technology. Maybe it is. Maybe it's blue beam, or maybe it is something natural up there that the elite take credit for. They're happy to let you think that they have full control over the system and can like create some dazzling display in the sky that freaks everybody out. But maybe not. Maybe it is just part of the larger system. I really don't know. But just because it's fresh in my mind, that map, and I'm looking at places to live, and I'm thinking Texas is too hot, but maybe it won't be. I think about moving to Washington State, but I'm like, I don't know. Maybe Washington State's not the place to be. Maybe it'll get increasingly cold there, even more so than it already can get. I don't know, but I think that I think maybe a lot of why we feel like they're speeding up the timeline and trying to get all these things in place is because they know we're going to enter a window of time where we go through something climate based. You know, I'm not saying humans create climate change and all that, but there's natural cycles. I mean, I think we can admit that. And if they know a natural cycle is coming, they want to have all their pieces in place before that happens. Digital currency, electric vehicles, all the things they can have full control to shut on and off. I think that that's worth considering, that that's part of why we feel that they have a sped up timeline. Because I think you might agree. I mean, most people I talk to think that it looks like they're scrambling and they're moving at such a quick pace that people are waking up to it because it doesn't seem natural. Usually they go on these long arcs, and that's how they hide, is they just do things so gradually. But people are like, Jesus, every week is a new fucking thing. Like,
I know.
And I think that that's because they're under some kind of pressure, and it might be based on a cycle they think is coming.
I've been saying the same thing. It feels like, you know, we all know about 2030. It's been the benchmark from the UN for a long, long time. And that's always been the goal. And we know they want to get us wherever they want to get us by 2030. But I've been feeling over the last couple of years like there must have been a big meeting where the boss came in and said, 2030 is no longer the goal. It's 2025, step on it. And, and then they came out and said, he yelled, I don't care if you have to give everybody fucking lottery tickets, get them injected, you know, because then after all of a sudden, like everyone started saying, hey, well, we'll give you lottery tickets if you come to take these injections, like all these governors. And you're like, were you guys all in the same stupid meeting together or something where they gave you the dumbest idea ever? But it's feeling like they're rushing. And I actually would prefer, though I don't want them to do any of this, I don't want them to put any of these plans into place. If I had to pick, though, I would pick them rushing as opposed to having all the time they need. Because if they're rushed, they have the potential to make mistakes. I remember I was talking to Alex Cranier, who runs a hedge fund, and he was talking about, you know, he goes, the thing is, if you get worried about these global elites having like a 10-step plan for depopulating everybody or putting everybody in one world government, it's great and all that they have these 10 steps to their plan. But if step number two goes wrong for them, it doesn't matter that they have 3, 4, 5 and the rest of them all planned out. They're now stuck on step two because you guys are messing it up. So he was saying that he was in favor of us creating as much havoc as we can to gum up their machines and throw them off, because they're operating on a timeline that's like, first you do this, then you do this, then you do this. And if, as long as all those things happen in the order in which they want them to happen and on the timeline that they want them to happen, then they're going to put this thing into place. But if the second domino doesn't knock down the rest of the domino chain, then you've got a problem. And so I felt more optimistic after I got off that conversation with him. You think it's maybe better for us that they're rushing, or is it just, I don't know, just all bad?
It's definitely better that they're rushing. I mean, I totally agree with you that they might make mistakes in that rush. And I think people are waking up to things because they're happening so quickly. I also think one of the miscalculations they made is people's purchasing power, because they're trying to convert everyone to electric. It's like electric cars aren't affordable, and you already squeezed people quite a bit. And also they want everyone to have smart appliances so that, you know, and they can look into your fridge and be like, well, you got a little too much. Your neighbor doesn't have any. We're going to send him over to get some of your stuff.
Yeah.
People can't afford that stuff. People can't afford a new range of appliances in their homes. And even though they're sexy and people are attracted to them, those Nest thermostats. Also, you have to be a homeowner to really buy a new fridge and get a new thermostat. Like, that's not really in your control when you rent. And so many people I know do. So I think they made a miscalculation there that people could actually afford to follow their directions to onboard everyone to this new infrastructure where everything's connected. People just can't do it, even though they might want to. A lot of people I know love that stuff. I was like that a few years ago, where I was like, man, I can't wait until I can get all this pimped out gear and control my lights with my phone. I mean, I'm past it now, but I could see the appeal when that stuff was new. And I'm just like, I want more control over my living space, you know?
Right.
But I think that was a miscalculation. I think that the stuff they're trying to sell us with food, you know, being like going plant-based, the Impossible Burger, I'm seeing pretty conventional people react strongly to that. Like, I don't want that shit. Yeah. I try to always eat grass-fed. I try to get it from a local meat guy. I think that they're the ones who are going to be able to weather the storm in terms of like what's going on with the Dutch farmers. The oligarchs, you know, the cabal's coming in and saying, hey, because of climate change and because of your shitty practices, you have to reduce your production capacity by like 30% for climate change.
Right.
Like, what are you talking about? But that's just a small example of what they will be doing everywhere. And so, you know, Joel Saladin, one of my favorite guys, Polyface Farms, he's pretty blown up at this point. But also, you know, Doug Lindemuth is where I get my meat, Sunrise Ranch. It's a local place. But if you look up local independent rancher in your area, you will find something. And it is so important that you get on their customer list early and that they know your name. And that when they only have a certain supply, you're on that list, you know, because you've been supporting them before there was a crisis situation. Yeah. And they're going to want their revenue to keep coming in. You'd be like, hey, man, we got a good thing going. I can afford to buy your meat. You bring the box. You know, you already know now's the time. Last year was really the time. But, you know, there's two good times to plant a tree, 40 years ago and now. So do it now. But that's another miscalculation, I think. People don't want to eat bugs. People don't want to eat crickets. They don't think that's a good source of protein. And they don't want to eat Impossible Burgers and lab-grown meat. I still think that, you know, conventional people need to go a step further and think about grass-fed, organic, where they get their meat. But at least they want cows and pigs and chickens. Like, they're like, I'm pretty addicted to that. I need that to be my protein source. And I'm not buying the fact that we need to get rid of cows for any reason.
No, but I wonder if it isn't so ridiculous on its face, the concept, this push for fake meat and bugs and all of this, that even the normie, even the buddy with the 20-year job with the union, it goes, the fuck out of here with this bug stuff. I'm not eating these bugs. I don't care how much you try and, you know, market this. I wonder though, if you want the smart refrigerator that talks to your Amazon account and automatically sends, you know, places an order for eggs and milk when you get low and everything, that's cool. And it's interesting. But it's early too. Like, I don't think that stuff is, if they want to roll that out incrementally as technology improves, as the next iteration of your television or your fridge or your toaster oven or whatever, I understand. It's just the evolutionary process of technology, and I get that. But they're trying to skip steps and push forward technology that isn't even ready yet and push everyone into, you all have to have electric cars. You're like, So there's charging stations everywhere? Like, well, not yet. Like, well, what about the California power grid? Well, it's kind of a problem. Well, then why are we pushing electric cars so hard? Because you got to have one. Okay, but we're not ready for them. Great, cool idea. Maybe people want it. I mean, it's just swapping out gasoline for coal-burning energy, but that's beside the point. But even still, cool idea. Infrastructure is nowhere near ready for that.
Right.
We're having brownouts and things like people saying, well, you know, you got to turn, like you said, got to keep your Nest thermostat up at 78. Okay. Well, how can you justify the push for electric cars when you can't even get your thermostat to do what you want it to do?
That is a great point. And that brings up to me two other elements of why the rush is great for us. The technology, as you say, it's not ready. So, you know, you can only push so hard when the technology's not ready. There's also the factor that what's going on with Europe and Russia. I mean, Russia's supplying a lot of the energy and they're cutting the cord on that. And so now, like, places like Germany are going back to coal because they need to keep the lights on. You know, there's that stuff's going on too. So you have the climate agenda that's in conflict with the geopolitical infighting that they're causing, the sanctions and everything. So people are going back. They're like, screw this. Solar panels are not working. We're going back. And so it's, I feel like that's a great little thing that's happening, an element of the rush. And another factor with everything being so rushed is I think some people will start to think like whatever they're focused on, because there's so many fear-based things, you know, that they can get worked up about, but they will have to come to a point where they think with everything else going on, your focus is this. Yeah. And like the Impossible Burger is a great example of it. The plant-based meats. It's like, how is that your priority when this virus is out there killing my whole family?
Right.
Like, even normal people who are you know, captured by the fear of one part of the agenda or another, they're going to have to think like, well, our priorities are all out of whack. Every inflation's going up to close to 10%. People are getting squeezed harder than ever, and you're telling them to buy an electric car. Like, so many things don't make sense. An electric car is not going to fix this. So I do think that that's another, those are also great elements of the rush, is that so the technology is not ready and the priorities seem out of whack when we're on the doorstep potentially of a World War III scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been sort of a hallmark of the United States government recently to have their priorities completely out of whack, focusing on the minutia at the expense of like the real situations. They're like, you know, the biggest problem in this country, you know, Biden comes out there and goes, the number one issue that we've got to worry about is white supremacy. It's like,
right,
really?
Yes, yes,
that's the priority. I hope we get to a point where the biggest problem in America is white supremacy. Because if we get to that point, we're going to be good. Because I don't see a whole lot of white supremacy. And I don't, obviously I'm white, I don't really worry about it too much. But on the side note, never been recruited. Kind of offended. Got the bald head, the white as whiteness could be. Well, you know, I'm a straight up honky. No, nobody has tried to radicalize me. I haven't been invited to be into a like a biker gang or a 3%.
You haven't been to the flea market in Peavely, Missouri, because you stroll through there and you're going to get an application.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'd feel a little bit like there was at least some substance to it. But prioritizing the stupid at the expense of the most important things. It's an unsustainable strategy. And it feels like when you point that out to, you know, it feels like you have to point that out to some people and you go, why are they focusing on this? They go, oh yeah, you're right. That does seem kind of stupid. I don't know. It's like, oh, can we pay attention? I feel like it now paying attention seems to be in short supply these days.
I absolutely agree. That's my biggest gripe with the people I know is just, they aren't paying attention. They want to play golf on Sunday. I'm happy to do that. And we will just not talk about the fact that this might be one of the last couple of rounds we ever play because it's all falling apart. Again, I just don't like to be doom and gloom, but it's because I'm looking at Martin Armstrong's models. He's very good with his Socrates AI. So
he's so good that they put him in prison for almost a decade trying to get his technology, his program that can basically see the future financially, at least.
He's one of the top guys like on my dream interview list.
For sure.
Especially now. But, you know, him, the astrology, people who are spiritually inclined. I even hear, you know, people who do talk to indigenous shamans from regions of the world where they don't typically share their knowledge, they're saying, no, now is the time to share with the rest of the world who wants to hear the messages that we have and that kind of stuff, the insights they claim. It's like everywhere you look, every unconventional place you look, they feel like this is a very tense time. And we're coming up on like, I mean, this is just the beginning. Like we're in the infancy of what could be a very difficult second half of this decade that will be probably talked about and debated for the rest of time. The American decline, World War III. I mean, even also when you look at the predictions of think tanks like Deagle, they say that in a year or two, the population will be half of what it is today. What do you think that's about? You know, why are they on the government payroll as a credible source of modeling and good information? Is it because the shots kill off a bunch of people and make everyone sterile? Possibly. That might be 5 or 10% of that. But I don't think you get to half without a war, without food rations, without like massive starvation. It's scary. And like people are just sitting at home wondering who that is on the Masked Singer. It's like,
right.
All right, guys, are you just going to go down with this ship this way? Yeah, it's really concerning. What are you going to do? You know, we'll just keep doing our job the way we can. I feel like we're preaching to the choir a lot of the time. If you look at my most recent shows, they're about dog men and all kinds of crazy paranormal stuff. I know I cast a wide net, but what you're going to see in the next month, as I've booked out like the next month, it's going to be a lot of these prepper types. It's going to be a lot of these people who have a little bit of a knowledge base on Russian history. That's the other thing that bothers me is like, we're kind of siloed from what Russia themselves are saying. I'll listen to interviews where they're like, well, Putin gave a speech 2 weeks ago where he basically threatened the US and said, I'm going to bring those subs to your doors. Where is that in our news cycle? Like, we don't even get to know what they're saying. And it's like, if we could hear that, we might tell Biden, hey, chill the fuck out on sending Ukraine all these weapons and money. Just hold on a second, you know? So I do think it's kind of unfortunate that we're kept in ignorance. We're kept in the American bubble. And a lot of that stuff doesn't penetrate. But just so many scary things pointing to the next half of the decade being very dark. So, you know, take care of the people you love. Have as much fun as you can. If there's a restaurant in town you've been dying to try, get in there because their menu is going to start getting much smaller. Just try to have some fun and look at screens much less. I mean, we are looking at so many screens these days. We got to get out in nature. We got to get back to the way things were meant to be. This is a point like when I went to Armenia with Graham Hancock and looked at like all these ancient structures that are totally off the radar because no one really pays attention to what's in Armenia. He kept saying, you know, he's big on that climate, but on the comet and asteroid type catastrophe stuff too. He's like, you know, if an asteroid did strike, who survives? Really just like the people in Africa who have been living normal with the landscape forever. So it's kind of interesting that when we look at the history of humanity, it's like, oh, we all came out of Africa. Well, could there have been something so terrible that it reset the whole planet? Like that it really, I mean, we know we've been through mass extinctions before, but we have this idea, oh, we all came out of Africa and then went all around the world. Well, if a reset happened again, who would the survivors be? Who would have the best infrastructure to not have their way of life destroyed? It would be those indigenous people in the world. And they'd just be looking at the West like, oh, well, you know, you're panicking because you can't get on a smartphone. We never had that. You know, we know how to hunt. We know how to fish. We know how to keep ourselves alive. And then in 500 years from there, would people be looking back and be like, well, we all came from Africa. Because they're the only people who could like survive this most recent apocalypse. Maybe this keeps happening. But I just found that interesting.
Not a lot of Yanomamo tribes on Instagram.
That's true.
They have found the way. I didn't know you went to Armenia with Graham Hancock, though. That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's a bonus feature. I never really promote the bonus features of the, like when people subscribe to the show, obviously, plus for people who don't know, you get 2 hour interviews instead of one. That's kind of how I survived, how I make my money without sponsors. But there's also a page of bonus content that is random stuff I've done that just gets put on there as like plus bonuses. And one of those is like a 3-part video I put together, like, I don't even know, maybe it's over an hour of all the different sites that I went to with Graham Hancock over the course of almost 2 weeks in Armenia.
Wow.
And it was a tour led by Graham Hancock, you know, Yeah, that's up there on for anyone who is a member, or there's a 7-day free trial, so you can sign up, not give me any money, download a bunch of shows you want to hear to listen to later. watch the Armenia thing and then cancel and I'll get nothing. You know, it's a loophole.
Bad karma. You people out there trying to do that, you know what happens.
I mean, your life's going to fall apart because my sigil is going to protect my interests, but you know, you could do it.
Greg's got a digital voodoo doll of you. You just don't know it. He'll be putting pins in your ass if you don't sign up and continue with that. It's the greatest show in the alternative media. It's been a long running show. Greg, you have done something that a lot of people dream of doing. You quit a dead end job in retail. You said, I don't know exactly how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to figure it out along the way. Yeah. You had an idea. It's turned into the best conspiracy podcast in the world. And
they're a dime a dozen.
But yours is the original and it's always the best. It's Greg Carlwood, everybody. If you guys don't know about the Higher Side Chats, I mean, shit, get your head out of your ass. Where's the best place for people to find you to soak up some of that sweet, sweet content that you're putting out?
Well, it's on the places that you find podcasts. It's on Spotify. It's on YouTube. But really, I try to drive everyone to the website itself. I spent a lot of money trying to make sure that every feature of the best podcast players is incorporated into the website and is available on mobile. And I listen to a lot of podcasts and I don't like inconvenience. So, you know, I have a tech guy. I'm like, look, man, it's got to be as good as this. It's got to be as good as that. It's got to have this feature that Podcast Addict has. And he did an amazing job. It was a long road, but whether you are a paid or a free listener, I think the website is the best way to go. And that's what I try to drive everyone towards because I can't really rely on anything else to keep me up. You know, Podcast Addict, third-party podcast apps, sure, they're going to be there. But, you know, I've been taken off Spotify already, and then I have to field hundreds of individual questions. What happened to you on Spotify? That is just annoying. I don't want to do that. So yeah. I never try to drive people to those places that have that control. So thehighersidechats.com, I would say, is the best place to go.
And it's worth every penny of it. And everybody, if you like this episode, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. God knows the algorithms aren't going to help out much. They're going to see my name and Greg's name and they're going to go downvote. So share it with your friends and family. The website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter @macroaggression, and we will talk to you all soon.